Welcome to For the Health of It, starring Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor. She is joined by her co-host Jessica and producer Mike Clark. They will inspire you to eat, move, sleep, think, and live better.
We are back in the studio, and we had such a popular segment on breast health that we've decided to do a part two because there's so much more to talk about. Hormones and antiperspirant deodorant. I want to talk about mammograms. And
I think we should do a whole year series on these.
Oh, Mike.
I know. Enough already.
Do you remember what we talked about?
Yes.
Okay. Mike is on his best behavior since we're talking about boobies. Okay, I should only say the word breasts so he doesn't get all giggly.
Right.
Okay, please. Seriously? Okay, so we were talking a lot about wearing a bra, and one thing that we had touched on was how just like cyclists, you know, are, know that if they wear tight little shorts and sit on that seat that they increase the temperature of their testicles, increase the risk of testicular cancer. Same idea with breasts. We bind them up and force them close to our bodies, and it actually increases the temperature of our breasts.
That's absolutely right. One of the interesting things about that is everyone's pretty familiar with estrogen and progesterone and that there needs to be a healthy balance of that in the body.
Right.
Most people understand that estrogen grows and progesterone slows, meaning that estrogen promotes cell growth, which we need. However, too much estrogen causes overgrowth of cells, which by definition is cancer. So when we hold our breasts at a higher temperature, we actually increase the amount of estrogen because estrogen also cools the body. And any woman that's ever been trying to get pregnant knows that when they have their big rush of progesterone, their temperature spikes and they chart that. So by increasing the temperature of our breasts and not allowing them to hang away from the body and be cooler than the rest of our body, it actually increases estrogen, which increases cell growth within that specific tissue and therefore could potentially lead to cancer. Another interesting thing I found out about hormones in my research that I was completely unaware of is that the effects of pressure from clothing actually decreases melatonin. Most people know melatonin as that hormone that helps you fall asleep at night and stay asleep. And it's very important for that. The other functions of melatonin is that it's an antioxidant. So it actually fights cancer in your body.
Right.
Additionally, it binds to your T helper cells, which are a critical part of your immune system. And your immune system is responsible for clearing cancer out of your body. So if we're decreasing our melatonin by holding our breasts too tightly to our bodies, we don't have that available to work for our immune system and to clean out toxins.
Well, you know, and most bras are either made of non-breathable fibers, and or like I've you know done so many workouts where I put on like the sports bra sports bra that you know it, to me it's only going to be effective if it's like literally making it so there's no bounce at all. Like, and talk about tight against your skin.
Absolutely. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention that I didn't get to mention before was a lot of women are hesitant to go braless because their breasts hurt, and the reason that your breasts hurt is because the lymphatics and the glands are swollen in there, and they can't get the fluid out. So if you can go a few weeks even of just doing these jumping jacks or trying to be bra-free as often as possible, you'll find your breasts no longer get tender, and you'll be able to tolerate a lot of movement.
Oh, that's interesting.
You guys should organize a bra burning like they did in the 60s.
No, breasts are very expensive, Mike. I'm not doing that.
Okay.
No, if you remember, I said I can't go braless when I'm working. But see, I'm just putting that on myself. But yes, but it's true. And then, you know, I've also, I know that things like caffeine can increase the congestion in the breasts and increase the fibrous tissue. And I also know that wearing antiperspirant, if you think about anti means against and perspiring means sweating. So antiperspirant means make you not sweat. So you were just talking about how we have all this lymph flow and all the glands in the breasts. And sweating, I know, is a way that we get toxins out of the body. So when we don't allow the toxins to be released through the armpits, it's got to affect the breasts.
It absolutely does. In my belief, if you look at the research on it, they'll say it's inconclusive. But you have to wonder who's paying for that research. If you look for images of the lymphatic system. You'll see that there is a lot of lymph around the breast tissue, which makes sense because they need to drain regularly, and then that comes out through your sweat in your armpits. So we put this antiperspirant on there, and it's loaded with aluminum. That is the active ingredient in antiperspirant. Aluminum is known to act like estrogen in your body. So it actually binds to things that estrogen would normally bind to, or not allow estrogen to bind to things it needs to bind to. So there's a lot of correlation there, especially since I can't remember the exact percentage. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me. But the majority, a high majority of breast cancer occurs in the part of the breast that's closest to the armpit.
Okay, that makes sense.
So you're saying no bras and no antiperspirants. Should we all move to Vermont?
I think they would accept us there.
I think so, that too. Or Grateful Dead concerts.
I'd love to see what their rate of breast cancer
is. Oh, no, don't knock Vermont.
I'm not knocking. That was a joke.
For all you Vermont listeners, yes. I apologize for my co-host. Okay, so.
She's always apologizing
there
for me.
There are other options, if you don't want to move to Vermont, to be able to function in society without wearing antiperspirant.
Right, because deodorant is different. Deodorant helps you the smell, and you can get deodorant without antiperspirant.
Absolutely.
Correct?
There must be something natural that does that too, no?
Well, we had talked about coconut oil. So I love coconut oil. It's one of my most favorite things. I eat it and I keep it in my bathroom and I use it as body lotion. One thing I learned about it, it has lauric acid in it, which actually kills odor-causing bacteria.
There you go.
Nice. And it is a really great aftershave, so it'll smooth your skin after you shave your armpits. Mike, I know that's a concern for you.
My wife had a little container of it the other day, and I was like, what is that stuff? And she goes, rub it in your skin, and it's awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. So it's great for that.
It's also a natural sunscreen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so many things about coconut oil. But the greatest thing about it is the type of fat in coconut oil is amazing food for our cells, and it helps to build the membrane. So it's healing you. It's feeding your cells, and it's fighting off odor. So typically, on just an average day where it's not too hot, I can get away with just coconut oil. At the office, I layer coconut oil and Tom's deodorant without antiperspirant.
The mineral salts, the crystal deodorant, those you wet them and you put them on. They actually work really well, really well.
Yeah, because we all want to smell good, don't we?
Well, and To be honest, you know, I've learned over the years that if I'm going to be speaking in public or an extremely crazy day at the office, I'll put regular deodorant on because I just know that I'll be miserable by the end of the day.
Yeah, but you're not using it every day.
Right, you can pick your moment, right?
Yeah, right.
And do not apply it immediately after shaving. If you need to use antiperspirant, make sure that you haven't shaved in a couple of days. That makes a big difference, and there has been correlation proven on that level.
Wow, this is fascinating. Okay, let's go to break. And when we come back, I would like to know more about mammograms and, you know, all the stuff, all the pink ribbon stuff, the breast cancer awareness. You know, I've gotten a lot of mixed messages about it. And I let's just talk a little bit about, you know, where does this money go and who started these programs and do we want to support them? Let's figure that out.
You're listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. Your host is Dr. Jennifer Kretzinger, wellness chiropractor at Spinal Corrective Center in Amherst, New Hampshire. For more information about Dr. Jennifer or this podcast, check out spinalcorrectivecenter.com. If you would like to schedule a health checkup with Dr. Jennifer, call 603-673-5600 and mention this podcast to receive a special offer. That's 603-673-5600. To find a wellness chiropractor in your area, go to chiropractic.org/doctorfinder. Now, back to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it.
So we're back from break, and okay, listeners, I will admit, I am 40 years old
this
year.
You don't look a day over 39 to me.
Oh, thank you. I'm really holding on to that 39.
Yes, you are.
You know, if I were to just saunter into a doctor's office and say, hey, I'm 40 now, what tests would you like to do on me? I bet it's very possible that they'd say, oh, you're 40, let's do a mammogram. And I, you know, these... And I'm not going to downplay, you know, the women out there who maybe have had their lives saved by a mammogram. Mm-hmm. But the thought of, compressing and shoving my breast between two plates of radiography sounds a little scary to me.
It looks scary.
It should sound scary.
So what are the guidelines? Like what does the government say about the safety and how, you know, what should we do with mammography? What's going on with that?
Well, the new government guidelines, and when I say new, I mean over 3 years old. So keep that in mind, that most healthcare providers are not following these new guidelines set forth by the government based on years of research.
About like the safety and the necessity and the effectiveness.
Exactly. Okay. Just the guide, the protocol for medical doctors to follow when advising women when to start their mammograms and how often. The new guidelines suggest starting at age 50 and every other year only up until age 75. The reason for that is the breast tissue from age 40 to 50 is far too dense to actually get a clear reading. Additionally, dense tissue absorbs more radiation, so the risk outweighs the benefit from ages 40 to 50. And then over age 75, they've shown it's not effective at all. Because if you are 75 and you've never developed breast cancer, it's highly likely that it's going to turn into something that's going to end your life.
Okay.
So they don't even recommend it for women over 75. Sadly, doctors are still telling women that starting at age 40, they should have a mammogram every year for the rest of their lives.
That's a lot of radiation.
It absolutely is.
You know, we choose to utilize X-ray radiation to see the spine, and we're quite conservative with it. And for us, what we can gain from that information is so huge that we will conservatively take films at certain intervals. How much radiation is a mammogram compared to like a normal, like say, spinal X-ray?
I don't have that information, but I know that for a chest film, something that is basically penetrating your entire torso, a mammogram is 150 times, 150 times greater.
Radiation?
Yes.
Wow. So you could have 150 chest x-rays would equal one mammogram.
That is correct.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
That's because the tissue's so dense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They have to pump it up so much. Yeah.
The other option is doing breast self-exams. They did a study in 2000 that showed that a monthly self-exam followed by a brief training, so we've all seen those videos from our doctors, or you can even probably find them on YouTube, coupled with an annual exam with a trained professional that's going to your OBGYN once a year, and they actually do the manual exam and feel for lumps in your breasts, it is at least as effective as mammography.
Oh, wow.
Meaning it's likely more effective at detecting breast cancer. Because the information I found is that for women who have a family history of breast cancer and they walk into the doctor's office, the patient knows that, the doctor knows that information, the risk of being diagnosed with breast cancer can be as high as 100% when no cancer actually exists.
Oh, so there can be false positives.
There always are.
There's a pretty high rate of false positives with mammography. So a lot of people will end up having a pretty big scare, I know.
Yeah, that'll stress you out right there.
Yeah, and maybe go through some unnecessary testing and maybe even treatment, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, the New England Journal of Medicine did a study back in 2010 that found that only one person for every 2,500 screened. An article by the New England Journal of Medicine showed that mammography screening only saves one person for every 2,500 screened. And among those, at least 1,000, that's nearly half, will have a false alarm. Imagine the stress that puts on your body. And then 500 of those people will undergo unnecessary biopsy. Five more would be treated for abnormal findings that would never have become fatal.
So why hasn't this changed then?
There's a lot of money in mammography and chemotherapy, Mike.
Yeah, I know there is.
Well, and I read somewhere recently that breast cancer awareness, like the whole campaigning for that, was actually, is this true, was started by a pharmaceutical company?
That's absolutely correct.
Tell me more about, do you have some information about that?
I do. AstraZeneca, in combination with a company called Imperial Chemical Industries, actually started Breast Cancer Awareness Month. AstraZeneca is the producer of the top-selling chemotherapy drug.
Wow. So when you give money, so say I'm checking out at a clothing store and they say, do you want to give $5 to breast cancer research.
It's all over the place this month. Where every store we go in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where does that money go?
Typically, it goes to Susan G. Komen, and I'll let the listeners do their own research on this and extrapolate their own opinions about it. I don't want to take away from anyone that's walked 60 miles in a weekend. I think that's amazing to put that much of your love toward someone in your life or even just any cause. However, a lot of that money that they've raised hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. I think they raise $100 million a year, upwards in that magnitude of money that is going into researching breast cancer and the war on breast cancer. And breast cancer rates keep going up.
Well, and is a lot of the money for treatment once you have breast cancer, I assume. Right. And probably more effective drugs and chemotherapy mm-hmm. options.
And they say that mammography is prevention. It is not. It is early detection.
Sure, that's different.
And the thing about early detection is I want to just talk really briefly about what a 5-year cancer survival rate means, because this is very misleading and you deserve to know as a consumer. 5-year cancer survival rates are determined by, from the date of diagnosis, if the patient is still alive in 5 years, that's considered cancer survival. So if we detect, or even falsely detect, as all of these studies are showing we do, cancer early, then after that 5-year mark, they call it survival.
Even so if they die like one day after the 5-year mark?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we can keep people alive longer if they're detected with cancer. It will show that we have higher survival rates.
That's right. But they're showing that's a good measure for comparing therapies, but all it really shows is that detection standards have changed.
Well, and you know, we're not, of course, delving into breast cancer treatment. So there's fear around, you know, someone may say, I have this diagnosis and now I have to decide what to do about it. And that's, you know, really a personal choice based on what is available to them, whether they try to holistically help their body heal or medically. But what I find interesting, if we're really going to help women, we would put the money and the focus and the education and the research towards how do we have to treat our breasts differently in order to prevent it, right? Because I guarantee a lot of young girls don't realize what an antiperspirant will do or what wearing a tight bra will do or not letting the breasts move. And you know, this type of information is, I think, really critical. If we were following this and as a society, as a culture, we started to have maybe less stringent viewpoints mm-hmm. on breasts, to me, that could really make a difference.
And really, it's a follow the money type of thing. You have to think about how many companies profit from bra sales, from chemotherapy, mammography equipment. One thing I mentioned in my workshop a couple weeks ago was that everybody understands that smoking causes lung cancer. And that campaign has been out for decades. And people know if you smoke, you're probably going to get lung cancer. Well, the correlation between bras and breast cancer is 3 to 4 times higher than smoking to lung cancer.
Wow.
It's shocking. So it's getting maybe a grassroots movement, maybe someone that has a lot of money that is concerned about this and believes in this cause of true prevention and true health promotion, to get out there and spread this information.
I'm going
to
do that today. Every girl I see, I'm going to say, take off your bra. No, seriously.
Do what you can, Mike. Yeah, do what you can.
I am. I'm up for the cause.
But seriously, folks, that's what we've been doing for years now, is we want to bring to you raw talk about full potential living, because it's not just about wait till we get sick and then see what we medically can do to try to turn our bodies around. It's really about what can we do now in the way that we live and the choices we make to create a healthy body and really live life just the fullest that we can. So these crazy, crazy episodes and all this fantastic talk is really about helping you express your full potential.
I know it's kind of scary having two doctors in here now. I feel really dumb. Don't say anything, Jenny.
Well, and if you'd like to see some pictures of us, or if you'd like to be able to make comments, you can like our page on Facebook. It's called For the Health of It. Just find that page and like it. No, there won't be any pictures of our tatas.
Damn.
Unless Mike's taking some we don't know about right now.
Hidden cameras in the studio. Anyway, this has been a really important segment. I hope that you share it, because really what it's all about is we just want you to be well, everybody.
You've been listening to some raw talk about full potential living for the health of it. For more information, go to spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call Dr. Jennifer at 603-673-5600. That's spinalcorrectivecenter.com or call 603-673-5600.